This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Life sustains itself by cell division. So does cancer. Breast cancer cells multiply faster because of CDK4/6 proteins. But what if we could block those proteins and stop runaway cell division? To that end, Dana-Farber scientists laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, new drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Dana-Farber's momentum of discovery keeps finding new ways to outmaneuver cancer. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
What did Pope Benedict do for the church's brand?
Wake up to the day's top business headlines. Subscribe to the Marketplace Morning Report podcast. It's on iTunes and marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update for Monday, February 11th. And we'll start with the surprise announcement out of the Vatican that Pope Benedict is resigning later this month. The 85-year-old Pope says he doesn't have the strength to continue his official duties. Now, Pope Benedict took office in 2005 as the Catholic Church was reeling from a sex abuse scandal. So has he been effective in restoring the Church's brand around the world? For answers, let's bring in the BBC's longtime Vatican correspondent, David Willey. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, so what has Pope Benedict done for the Catholic Church's brand around the world?
Well, he's not been a proactive pope in the sense that John Paul was a very proactive pope, taking out the church's message with his worldwide travels. But my feeling has been that this pope has been, as it were, fighting almost a rear guard action on behalf of the church. He's had to face the huge scandal involved in the clerical sexual abuse crisis. He's had other crises as well. There is something of a financial crisis. We've had statements from senior Vatican officials in recent months to say that the Vatican has to cut its expenditure. And of course, running on charity, as it were, there's only certain sources of funding that are open to it.
Now, in the U.S. and in Europe, the church's influence has been waning for a long time, even before Pope Benedict came in to power. So has he done anything to reverse that trend?
I would say not. You know, there's a long list of problems that Pope Benedict has had to face, and he's dealt with them clearly to the best of his abilities. But don't forget that he was the fourth oldest pope in history to be elected. He was already 78 years old when he took on the job, and it's been too much for him.
One more thing, David. You're in a country, Italy, that is at the center of the European debt crisis. The pope has certainly talked about the debt problems all around the world a few times. Has he had any impact, do you think, on the decisions being made by the policymakers across Europe?
He has tried to emphasize the need for ethical financial systems. But I think when the Pope starts talking about economics, people's eyes glaze over. It's very difficult for him, a theologian, to continue the teaching of his predecessors on economic affairs, which have become extremely complex. I don't think either he or anyone else in the church thinks it's their role to start telling bankers how to behave. Any attempts that he may have intended to try to get a juster distribution of wealth in the world don't seem to me to have had much effect.
The BBC's David Willey in Rome. Thank you, David.
Nice to talk to you.
President Obama will lay out his second term agenda tomorrow night at the State of the Union address, and there will be a lot of talk about issues of importance to senior citizens and to families and to college students. But one group with ties to the administration wants to hear more about preschoolers. From the Marketplace Education Desk at WIPR in Baltimore, Amy Scott reports.
Many studies have shown that kids who go to preschool end up better off. Michael Linden is director of tax and budget policy at the Center for American Progress.
They are much less likely to end up in jail. They're much more likely to have higher earnings over the course of their lifetime, better health outcomes.
The center is pushing a plan to expand federal funding for preschool so all 3- and 4-year-olds can go. Under the plan, the government would match state funding, on average up to $10,000 per child per year. Neil McCluskey is with the Center for Educational Freedom at the Cato Institute. He says the government doesn't have a great track record. Recent studies have shown the federal Head Start program for low-income kids doesn't always produce lasting benefits.
Federal large-scale pre-K programs are not providing the kinds of outcomes that we're being told we should expect if it gets further involved.
Then there's the money. The Preschool for All plan would add almost $100 billion to the budget over 10 years, a tough sell in Washington. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
Well, today marks exactly 2 years since Hosni Mubarak's 30-year rule came to an end in Egypt. It has been a rough ride, both politically and economically, since then. Joining us now from Cairo to discuss is the BBC's Rob Young. Hi, Rob.
Hi, Jeremy.
Well, so you've been there several times in the last few years. How are things different right now economically?
Well, the economy is in a much worse state today than it was in the immediate aftermath of the ousting of President Hosni Mubarak 2 years ago. Today, the economy is growing at a slower rate. The unemployment rate has risen. The value of the currency, the Egyptian pound, has plunged against the US dollar. And when you go to food markets, people will tell you the cost of living is going up as well. One of the reasons is the falling value of the currency. For example, chicken has gone up in price because many people import chicks from abroad and they pay for those in dollars.
Well, what do people want to be done to turn Egypt's economy around and get it moving again?
One of the things the government is trying to do at the moment is to agree an emergency loan with the International Monetary Fund for a little shy of $5 billion. And the hope is that if the Egyptian government gets effectively a stamp of approval from the IMF, then other investment and aid from other countries will follow. And if people go home from the streets, then all important tourists will return as well, another important source of revenue for Egypt.
Are you seeing any tourists right now?
There aren't all that many tourists. I was talking to the boss of a tourism company just a couple of hours ago. He was saying that some hotels have effectively closed their doors for the time being. Some have only got occupancy rates of about 10%.
Wow.
And for those who want to come to Egypt, can get bargains because many people are desperate for the business.
The BBC's Rob Young in Cairo, Egypt. Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, Jeremy.
And finally, the world's largest fortune cookie manufacturer is changing its message. After complaints from parents, Wonton Foods is cutting fortunes like The Evening Promises Romantic Interest. And according to the New York Post, the company will replace them with more G-rated messages like You Make Every Day Special. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.